Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Nancy Good. Welcome, Nancy. It's great to have you with me.
Thank you, Gloria. It's great to be here.
You've been listening to some of these, so you have some idea of how it goes. And we always start at the beginning. I know a little bit about you, and I do know that you are not a native Oregonian. Tell us where life began for you.
Life began in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. For the first 2 years of my life, that's where my family lived. And then my dad, mom, and a couple of my sisters and brother, we moved to York County, Pennsylvania, on a farm.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
Well, that would seem to be simple. I could give you a number. So I'm middle of the first seven to my mom and dad of seven children. So yeah, there were three sisters and four brothers of that family. And then after my mom had passed away when I was 6 years old, a year later, my dad remarried. And so my stepmother, Rachel, and my dad had four more children. Yeah.
For a total of
11, I guess, 7 and 4. A couple of them, like one child died just like a day old, really an infant. And another child, it was 2 years old, of my stepmother and my dad, of a farm accident. My family doesn't always count them, but I do. I think it's important. There are 11 of us. Yes.
Which leads me to this question. Can you give me a benefit of being in a large family and then a challenge on that same issue?
Well, the benefit is that there are a lot of hands to work on a large dairy farm of many cows. We had like 100 or some to milk every morning and every evening growing up. And the younger ones didn't sort of get in on that. I don't know if my younger sisters will listen to this, but they had it pretty easy. At that point, my parents were starting to get off of the dairy farm. So the benefit is many hands for much work to be done. And we also had a great choir because we all sang. And most of us played instruments, even though in the home church, instruments weren't really a thing to be had because of some conservative thinking about music. But we did play instruments and piano. So that's a couple of the benefits. A challenge? Well, actually, one more benefit is that I found out what my job in life was to be, even when I didn't know it. And that was to be the middle of the seven. I was always the mediator. I never caused the problem or the conflicts. I was always mediating conflicts of my brothers and sisters. And again, they're not on this podcast, so I'm telling my truth of the story. I'm joking, of course. Although my work is as a counselor and my life work is as a mediator. The challenge, oh my goodness, is there enough to go around? Usually there was enough food and clothing, but there's some hard times and love, attention, listening ears, of course, especially after a mother of seven of us had passed away so suddenly. And that was a shaping piece. I'll just name it at the beginning, just because it happened so early in my life. And it shaped, it was a shaper for sure of my life, of her passing. So once again, with a mother not being there, and she worked on the farm, as I have been told, as well as, of course, was the one holding things down in the house as well, and just loved being a mother. Thankfully, that was so because she had seven of us. And I understand years later in talking to my dad that she was actually pregnant with another child. It was a drowning accident, was the incident when she was trying to go and save my older sister, who had slipped out of an inner tomb, the one rare time we got off of the farm to have some fun. And we don't quite know what happened, but she slipped and she lost her footing and drowned. Very, very tragic. My youngest brother was 2 years old and my oldest sister was 12. And We went back home, milked the cows that night, or my dad did, and we followed in line. And that's, you just got to keep on somehow. So surviving after loss, sudden and really major loss, really marked me, marked our family of some challenges. So, and then when you have many children, there are many children trying to figure out what happened and who do you ask the questions to? And you just, for the most part, there's work to be done. So one focuses on that. So those are some of the good and the challenges of a large family.
Do you have a special memory of your mother? You said you were six when she died. Do you have a special memory?
Wow, that's amazing that you asked that question. I think where I will go is that the memory that I had to really dig deep for it. And it was many, like 30 years after she passed away, that I got clear that I wanted to have memories of her. I do remember for years, like going into college and so forth, I knew that I had a mother, although we didn't ever talk about her. Like there was a picture of her, and we knew that the seven of us came from somewhere, but we didn't ever mention her. And then especially a year after Mom had died and my dad remarried, it was like, well, then we really don't talk about it. But my grandparents, that in-between year, I was between first and second grade. My grandparents came over from Lancaster County with their youngest, my aunt, who still had 1 year of high school to do, and lived with us. And quite amazingly, for that year, and I didn't know until 30 some years later, my dad told me that they gave my dad a year to find a mother for us. And that's pretty hard. You know, he's 30 something, he's balding, and he has seven children and 2 years old. I mean, we're not like almost out of the home. We are very much needing to be cared for. And so, you know, it's hard to, if he had a dating profile these days, you know, young, 30 something, balding, and that's not all. There's seven beautiful children and several hundred cows to milk and a good time to be had. Please answer my profile. And yeah, no, so he had a hard time, and he found a woman in Lancaster County, a single woman, Rachel Zug, who became Rachel Zug Good, never been married. And yeah, she has her own story. I interviewed her for my social history when I was in college at Masai College and asked her, whatever, you know, why did you marry my dad? And yeah, she was 28, the youngest of three. And she said, well, do you think I was attracted to someone who was balding? And it had been her prayer that she would never be on a farm. And so here she marries somebody with seven. And so once again, I asked you the question, why did you marry my dad? And her sincere answer was that she felt like it was the Lord's will that she marry my dad. And she saw, obviously, the great need. She became, from Mannheim, Lancaster County to York County, she became known to us because our hired help was second cousin to her. And her name was Helen Fansler. And she was having Rachel go around to talk, share her slides and her presentation from when she spent 3 months, I believe, as it was in Europe after the war of rebuilding. And she came around and my dad happened to be there. I think Helen maybe wanted her to meet my dad. I'm not sure. No, actually, the fact was Helen corrected me at my stepmother's funeral just a couple years ago. I didn't know she was in the audience. So I was telling the story that Helen had met there, and she stood up and testified in the sharing time. No, I did not. I would never introduce your father, like of seven children, to my cousin. And so it was my dad who pursued her after the slideshow and said, could you, you know, give me her phone number or anything. And Helen would not do this. And she just said she works in a bank in Mannheim. She attends Chickie's Church of the Brethren, and that's it. So he pursued it from there.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
So the grandparents that came and spent that year with you, were those your father's parents?
My father's parents, Grandma and Grandpa Good.
Mm-hmm. I have to go back to the music question. You said that you played various instruments. Can you give me just a little idea of what kind of instruments you would have had in your home growing up?
The main instrument that all of us got a few lessons on was piano. We practiced before we went to the barn or something like that in the morning, because again, we early to the barn at 5 a.m. and then 5 p.m. again, we're out there. So piano was an old upright piano. Yeah. And the instruments, I played clarinet. My brother Bob played trumpet. The twins, my brothers under me, played saxophone and trombone, Richard and Roger. And then Tim played trumpet as well. And then my younger sisters were clarinet and some others. My older sisters played the piano and then organ.
So these other instruments, these wind and brass instruments, would they have been something that your siblings learned in school, or where would that have come from?
Absolutely, yeah. We no private lessons or anything, and it had to not interfere with the farm work, although that became a problem when I was in high school. Unfortunately, I played the clarinet, and I was in concert band, which also meant I was in marching band, and so the only way I could get to the football games. But yeah, we had lessons in elementary school. I don't know if they do. I guess they don't do that anymore. So I learned the clarinet, and I faithfully carried that instrument to and from school every day. It was a ticket of joy that I saw I could really practice and pursue this thing. But I also singing was my main instrument. But clarinet was a easy competition to that through grade school, and then in junior high, of course, there's concert band and concerts and orchestra, and then through to high school. Yeah. I put it aside, the clarinet, that is when I graduated from high school. And recently, the past 10 or so years, I've pulled it out to play tango music and classical music in the DC Tango Orchestra before I came here. And I pulled out my old clarinet. It still worked and squeaked at times. And then I cashed it in and got a brand spanking new one. I have a new love experience with the clarinet.
And that first clarinet, did you own that?
Yes. Yeah, my dad bought a very good Bundy woodwind clarinet. Yeah, we each bought it. The instruments we had, they were not rented, in other words.
You went to public school?
I did, my whole 12 years. Yeah, in York County. And I mentioned that because, you know, my family came from Lancaster County, so they would have known Mennonite schools, perhaps, or private Christian schools. That was not an interest, I guess, of my dad's. I'm not sure that we could have afforded it. I also mention it because my family was part of a very conservative Church of the Brethren, and every Sunday we wore the coverings. So a year after mother died, I joined the church. My two older sisters wore a covering to school. And so I followed the pursuit of my older sisters in that line. And there was nobody else in York County at Red Line School that wore a covering. And in the county, it's not like Lancaster County where you see this white doily sort of covering on some women's heads. And so it was a very strange thing, but it was one thing that marked me. And it was something I did until I graduated. And then that was it. I took it off and never to be worn again.
Did you wear it because you felt you had to? Or
no question, I had to. It wasn't something, I still haven't figured out the details of it, but I don't think my mother would have made us. I think it might have been my grandmother. And then my two older sisters, I have a picture of the family that fall right after mother died, and they have their coverings on. Of course, we were on our way to church at that point, but they weren't to public school. I cannot understand why. And yes, I did. And then I could take it off when I played the band, you know, to have on this big marching hat with a plume. I could take it off and that was fun, but it was always there. And kids had a way of teasing about it in not very funny ways. And yet it was something that I just, now there are a number of things that I just knew that I was really different and I was treated like one from the country versus the town folks. Red Line isn't such a big city at all. And yet they thought they were the cool town folks. And so I was coming from the farm, so many of us, the covering, yeah, more conservative. And so with all of that, simply it was like, okay, what do I need to do to continue to make friends and be friendly, even though it wasn't, I mean, it was treated well, quite well. And yet there were certainly some that you were in this class or that class of how, you know, one is treated. And I just knew that school and music was my ticket off of the farm. And it was away out of home where it was just really hard work. It was hard work on many levels, the farm work, but also hard work emotionally, relationally. As people were a lot of unresolved grief, I can name it now, and in a lot of pain, trying to figure out how to just get along. And we did well when we sang together. So church was also very important. You know, to go 4 to 5 times a week, Sundays 2 times, choir practice, prayer meeting, et cetera. Harold Good bench was full anytime the church doors were open.
You graduated from high school. How did you know what was going to come next and who made that decision? Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to go to college. My one sister had already gotten in and was attending Messiah College. But many friends around me, of course, were going to many other colleges or whatever. I just knew I was leaving Airville, Red Line, Pennsylvania. And I wanted to keep the connection. Obviously, your family is your only family that you get. And it was really important for me to stay connected and also see what's out there. I think I pursued going to Messiah College, a Christian liberal arts college, because it seemed like a really good education. And it was also one where I could keep exploring faith and spirituality and a belief that it was not a boxed-in approach as my conservative church was. My church experience there was good and wholesome, but it was very much focused on men in leadership. To this day, it is. No women are doing any kind of preaching or speaking from the pulpit, except if somebody in my family dies, I purposely choose to speak for the eulogy, as I did for my brother Tim's eulogy, from the preaching side. But I was very aware of those kinds of, I wouldn't name it as sexist at that time, but of course it is. So it was very confusing. And then also the whole thing of if you ask questions, it means your faith is falling away. So you just learn to just be quiet until you could get out of there. And so I was driven to study philosophy and religions of the world and psychology, of course, and sociology for my years that I was there. I took a year off after my sophomore year. I was in a traveling band for the summers that I was there. And I just knew my sophomore year, I was reading a lot more other than my required courses. I was just so curious about how people live and how they make their decisions or about God and questions. So it happened. There's so much serendipity and that shows up in my life that takes me this turn or that turn. And this was a key one of them. May of 72, sophomore year, I just finished. I'd stayed around the summer because the band was touring for the summer out to California and back at some Jesus festivals, etc. And I was there. There was a choir in from Fresno Pacific college, never heard of it, but they were singing. And I went to the Sunday evening singing, I loved it. And then got talking to a guy, one of the singers, all night long, found out that he had come back from a China exchange program, which Messiah never had anything like it. We talked all night long. I waited an hour until 8 a.m. the next morning to talk to the dean about how I could possibly have a year off. It just seemed like a dream come true. Travel the world. I don't know. I was just making this up. But could I get some college credit for this sort of thing? This had never been done. But the dean said, as long as I would get some professors to sign for me, he saw that that certainly could be a possibility. And that's what I did. I set up a whole year of study. I studied at a place called Le Brie, which was a place, it's a French word for shelter. I had read the book in my sophomore year by Francis and Edith Schaefer. It's actually written by Edith, which was this place in Switzerland mainly, but they had other Le Brie centers where you could go and work 4 hours and study 4 hours a day on religion and Christianity, of faith and presuppositions about why you believe anything that you believe, and read a lot of C.S. Lewis and John Stott and Schaefer's and others. So I did get to go there for 3 months, and then also worked in the London Children's Hospital doing volunteer social work with children, and got a number of my psychology, sociology, social work courses. But boy, did that open up my eyes. I cannot believe that my dad allowed me to go. He thought I was looking for a man and didn't understand why I wouldn't just go to Lancaster Bible College. And it's like, no, that's not really what are you talking about? What I'm looking for. But he allowed me to go because I convinced him that it would be less money if I could get my ticket and just go to England and then Switzerland rather than live on the dormitory and so forth. But I had never flown before. I was so naive. I just did not know. I wouldn't have left my daughter do it, I think, when she was 18 or 19. But he allowed me to do that. And again, it was just one of those life-changing experiences where I feel like I had a presence of an angel. I believe my mother's spirit, was with me a number of times. And that's just, again, one small example. Yeah, 74.
It sounds like this gave you an opportunity to ask all of those questions, and that was fine with the people that you were asking them of. They weren't judging you because you were asking questions?
Exactly. It provided me a format that I saw that I had at the college. And yet this was something where day in and day out, each meal was a 3-4 course meal where the purpose was to be together at a long table, and you brought together the questions and things that you're looking at and listening to. And it was a discussion, and questions, were invited. And it was just so wholesome. I mean, it was the simple sort of thing of, if I had been born into a Muslim family, or if I would have been Buddhist and born in India or some other place, then that would be my faith. And why would certain people be going to hell? Because, I mean, it was such a conservative and hellfire kind of way of understanding God and, quote, love, God's love, unquote. Very, very rigid compared to, it's okay, you will find your way. God is pretty big, and we don't have to quiet the most anguished of our questions. That's what I found. That was the answer that I found. And it continues to be the steps that I take. Even many, many years later, I still believe that. It's a seeker kind of learning. And so that's the answer. It's not a clear, solid answer, but it's the process answer to continue go on living and learning.
What did you end up getting your degree in from Messiah? And where is Messiah College, just for reference?
Messiah College is outside Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, in Grantham, Pennsylvania. And my degree was in behavioral science, a combination of social work and psychology. Then years later, after working at Fellhaven Hospital as a psychiatric social worker and a psych tech, I moved to Virginia and got my master's degree in social work while I kept my full-time job. And it was around that same time that I was pregnant with Ashley, my first child, and then moved into continuing. So from 74 on to the current day, I am a therapist, a psychotherapist. I work with families, I work with individuals, I also work with large groups. So it's moved from not only individuals, although that has carried on the whole time, to working with neighbors and working with families in conflict and mediations. And I do a lot of international consultation. So yeah, that's a, then I got my PhD. Then years later, in 2006 was when I completed my PhD in the intersection of trauma healing and restorative justice, really looking at conflict transformation across many lines of individual going into groups and then larger groups and nations. So, yeah.
I don't think that I ever knew that we could call you Dr. Good. That's amazing.
Yeah. Actually, you know, most people do. I don't require it as I required it of my kids when I completed the dissertation while raising them and keeping my jobs. And yeah, my kids were required to say, hey, mama, Dr. Mom, Dr. Good.
Well, we have just a bit of time, and so we're going to jump way, way ahead. What brings you to Portland, Oregon, and how long have you been here, and why are you here?
Good question. I arrived in November 4 years ago, 2016, and that was quite a journey. I moved from Washington, D.C., where I was working full-time with the U.S. Agency for International Development in staff care. Had a great full-time job. I was really loving the work that I was doing. And then Ruby Jane was born, and my first grandchild out here with Ashley and Levi. And I came out to visit, of course. I was with them, and I committed to coming once a month, which I did, because I just couldn't imagine leaving a full-time job and moving to Oregon. I mean, there are many great places of the world, and I've traveled to many places. And at that time, I wasn't thinking about Oregon. But after the third or fourth month, it happened where I was saying goodbye to Ruby and Ashley in the car at the airport. And I was big hug, kisses, goodbye. I mean, she's a baby. Right. And I was closing the door, and I just experienced this well up from my stomach and then my chest. I don't know the last time, but I ended up just sobbing right there. And it was just convulsing. And we gave another hug. And on the way home on the plane, I wrote my resignation letter effective 6 months later. And I knew what I needed to do to just get my body out here and be here. And that's what I did. It was crazy. My sons, we drove across country and had a great road trip together and coming here. And I love it. And now I have, Ryder is also now two, Ruby's almost five in a month. And it's such a joy to be with them.
And we do need to mention the names of your other children, just for the record.
Ashley's the oldest, Jane Ashley. And then my two sons are Jay and Julian. The greatest joy that's come out of this COVID, I know that's one of your questions and we don't have time to get to it, but my resilience factor has really blown wildly grand in this COVID time in being able to sing with my kids again on this a cappella app and bring in Ruby. Ryder now wants to also join in, but doing music together in ways that we've never done before. We did some singing, of course, we were a singing family, And yet this has been such a joy and would not have happened if it had not been for COVID.
And we at Portland Mennonite are the recipients of that wonderful connection that you all have. So on behalf of everyone, thank you so much for doing that for our online services. It's a great gift to all of us.
I'll pass the thanks on to my kids. They want to do this. Obviously, they are adults now. And yet it's still like pulling teeth a little bit to get our schedules together from Mexico and Virginia and everywhere else they might be.
Well, I have about a million more questions that I would just love to ask you, but maybe some other people will ask you those questions as we chatted before we started the recording. So, Nancy, thank you so much for taking the time to share just a little of your life with us.
Thank you, Gloria, for doing these COVID Chronicles. It has made so many connections with people. I have experienced that so much in this time that I never would have happened if we had just gone to church every Sunday, because you don't meet as many people and go the depth that you go as you're interviewing people. So thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you for saying that. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. We hope you discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.